Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. A reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 8. Prayers by King Kunti and Parikshit saved. Text 40. Ime jana parashrita. Supakrao sarivivuda. Vanadri najudan vanto. Yedante tava vikshatai. Ime jana parashrita. Supaktau shari viruda. Vinadri najudan vanto. Yedante tava vikshatai. Ime jana parashrita. Supaktau shadi viruda. Vinadri najudan vanto. Yedante tava vikshatai. Janapada, cities and towns. Shridha, flourished. Supakra, nature. Aushadi, herbs. Viruta, vegetables. Vana, forests. Adri, hills. Nadi, rivers. Udanvata, seas. He, certainly. Edante, increasing. Tava, by you. Vikshatai, seen. translation. All these cities and villages are flourishing in all respects, because the herbs and grains are in abundance, the trees are full of fruits, the rivers are flowing, the hills are full of minerals, and the oceans full of wealth. And this is all due to your glancing over them. Purport. Human prosperity flourishes by natural gifts and not by gigantic industrial enterprises. The gigantic industrial enterprises are products of a godless civilization, and they cause the destruction of the noble aims of human life. The more we go on increasing such troublesome industries to squeeze out the vital energy of the human being, the more there will be unrest and dissatisfaction of the people in general, although a few only can live lavishly by exploitation. The natural gifts, such as grains and vegetables, fruits, rivers, the hills of jewels and minerals, and the seas full of pearls, are supplied by the order of the Supreme. And as he desires, material nature produces them in abundance or restricts them at times. The natural law is that the human being may take advantage of these godly gifts by nature and satisfactorily flourish on them without being captivated by the exploitative motive of lording it over material nature. The more we attempt to exploit material nature according to our whims of enjoyment, the more we shall be entrapped by the reaction of such exploitative attempts. If we have sufficient grains, fruits, vegetables, and herbs, then what is the necessity of running a slaughterhouse and killing poor animals? A man need not kill an animal if he has sufficient grains and vegetables to eat. The flow of river waters fertilizes the fields, and there is more than what we need. Minerals are produced in the hills and the jewels in the ocean. If the human civilization has sufficient grains, minerals, jewels, water, milk, and so forth, then why should it hanker after terrible industrial enterprises at the cost of the labor of some unfortunate men? But all these natural gifts are dependent on the mercy of the Lord. What we need, therefore, is to be obedient to the laws of the Lord and achieve the perfection of human life by devotional service. The indications by Kunti Devi are just to the point. She desires that God's mercy be bestowed upon them so that natural prosperity be maintained by His grace. Om Gana Chimarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militang Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaur Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This verse is presenting the ideal of a genuine yoga and meditation culture. A culture in which the focus is upon consciousness and the supreme consciousness as the prime moving factors in life. Rather than say matter is the cause of all causes, rather than endow matter with inconceivable potencies, the Bhakti Yoga texts, our Krishna conscious literature, spotlight consciousness, our individual consciousness, and the supreme consciousness as the fundamental basis of existence. Therefore, the human spirit, the human endeavor, is meant for seeking the ultimate goal of life, how to connect the tiny particles of consciousness that we are with the supreme consciousness, Krishna, and do that in perfect harmony, in pure love. That is the actual goal of yoga and meditation. We were speaking last night about how rare it is today for persons to consider that the human form of life has a sublime overarching goal. Because the human spirit is being crushed by the industrial sector, by the service sector. Of course, these days the reality is that the industry has moved offshore, and so you have in its place the service sector, which, just like a factory, sucks up 24/7 the vitality and spirit of a human being, which is meant for self-realization. Our bhakti yoga criticism of the current attempt at human civilization is that it has no understanding of the real mission that the human body bestows upon you. In other words, if you have a human body, you have a sacred mission. Because of your gift of advanced consciousness, your life is meant for the highest purpose. It's a great tragedy when human beings cannot live in harmony with themselves, they can't live in harmony with nature, and they have no understanding of the ultimate source of themselves or nature. We have constructed a fantastic society in which no one knows who they are or what is their ultimate purpose in life. When we say no one knows, we're speaking about precise, comprehensive spiritual knowledge. We applaud religious sentiment. That's a step in the right direction. But human beings need profound, voluminous, comprehensive spiritual knowledge of what is the self, what is the supreme, and the relationship between the two. The question often comes up, if we are truly spiritual beings, then what is our relationship with our body? What is our relationship with the mind? And what is the relationship with nature? We need superior wisdom. And the bhakti yoga texts strive to give that superior wisdom to human society so that we can live in perfect harmony with other human beings, with animals, with nature, and with the supreme source, the unlimitedly attractive Krishna. Where is that knowledge for how human beings can live in harmony with all these vital aspects? What you see masquerading as human civilization today is simply exploitation. Exploitation of other human beings, exploitation of the animals, exploitation of nature, and no understanding of the ultimate source. We desperately need to revitalize a genuine human civilization. The bhakti yoga texts are giving us insight into what the real standard is. Sometimes we think that because that standard seems so high, it must be mythological. But look at things from another point of view. Maybe the consciousness, the behavior, the lifestyle of human beings today has crashed so low that an enlightened person, when hearing about it, would say, that's mythological. No one can be that devoid of higher consciousness. Who could live in nature and destroy their own habitat? Who could do that? The verse speaks of the benefits of living in nature in a divine way. That means in a way that acknowledges the ultimate source and our responsibilities and duties to that ultimate source. How are we to live? Should we deny ourselves of everything? Should we all run off to the Himalayas and find a cave? How should we live in such a way that our highest motivations can be realized? The Vedic texts give us information. The Ishavasya concept, a Sanskrit word meaning that you live in such a way that you acknowledge the ultimate proprietorship of everything and use everything for the ultimate aim of life. Then you're entitled to have an ecological footprint. In other words, as a human being, you're entitled to resources of this world. But you do it in such a way that you're supporting a spiritual lifestyle. To have a spiritual lifestyle doesn't simply mean your own self-styled manner of living. No, a spiritual lifestyle means you take your information from the ultimate source. That is the extraordinary advantage at the pinnacle of the yoga and meditation system. Take your knowledge, your wisdom, your lifestyle information from the Supreme Consciousness. Take it from Krishna. And then it's so easy to be in harmony with the energies that proceed from that ultimate source. Then you have a right to take your fair share of the planet's resources. Because your mission in life, your purpose in life, is in harmony with the genuine purpose of all existence. You seek that ultimate connection. You seek that perfect consciousness of your relationship with the Supreme Consciousness, with the unlimitedly attractive Krishna. So the Ishavasya concept means first acknowledge that all energy is controlled by the Supreme. And then you can take what is called your quota, your packet. You're entitled to your fair share of the Earth's resources. We were discussing last night. How do you judge who is a materialist? The usual bottom line for labeling someone as a materialist is, anyone who's got more than me, they're the materialist. I have just what I need, and I certainly could use more. But the others who have a higher income than me, a bigger house than me, more cars than me, they are the materialists. But when we turn to the prime Bhakti Yoga text, Bhagavad Gita, there we find Krishna has another definition of what is a materialist. And that definition of Krishna's cuts across all economic class divisions. You can be a rich materialist, and you can be a poor materialist. So what is the actual standard, the yogic standard for judging who is a materialist or not? Never mind your income. It's all about, do you think that you are the body and mind? If so, whether poor or rich, you are a materialist. Then there's a second defining factor. Do you recognize, whether you have billions or whether you have a few dollars, do you recognize ultimate proprietorship? So these two stipulations decide whether you are a materialist or not. Do I think I'm just matter? Do I think I'm just this body and mind, and the goal of life is to give as much pleasure to this body and mind as possible? Get it while you can? Or do I recognize that, as Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, I'm wearing the body and mind like someone wears clothes. But the real me is a non-material particle of consciousness. So my goal in life is to revive that understanding, that experience, My goal in life, as I often explain, is not simply religious belief. That's a step in the right direction. So many persons talk about spiritual, the soul, God, but where is the comprehensive, profound information about all that? So we applaud religious sentiment. Yet, we recognize that human civilization, if it's going to turn itself around, needs something more. Therefore, the wisdom, the knowledge that these ancient literatures give is so necessary for living today. Rather than just bemoan that human beings today are living as if they're on 1.5 planet Earths. Look at their ecological footprint. Look at the destruction going on. In just a few decades, the most significant factor in the oceans will not be fish, it'll be plastic. The amount of plastic in just 25 years or so will weigh more than all the fish in the ocean. And then you look at industrial agriculture. The soils are depleted. The waters are polluted. So many problems because we're taking shortcuts. The shortcut that we think is so efficient is that we forget the supreme consciousness. So this verse is pointing out that in a real human civilization, the people recognize the ultimate controlling factor of the supreme source. They recognize Krishna, and therefore there is prosperity. They don't think that the resources of this world are simply meant for my control and exploitation. I often point out that everyone likes to enjoy, but very few understand that in order to enjoy, you have to control to some degree and exploit, even to a very subtle degree. Material enjoyment goes hand in hand with control and exploitation. So if you want to become immune to control and exploitation by others, first you have to master your senses. And then no one can manipulate you. But as long as your senses, your mind, are uncontrolled, you can easily be persuaded, easily be manipulated. So this is the problem we have today. Whether educated or not, human beings are not in control of their senses. Therefore, someone can easily manipulate their lower self, especially in terms of body consciousness. You got some problems in life? Recognize it all comes from other persons. Other persons that don't look like you. Don't hate them, that's too extreme. But just recognize they're a problem. And how will you be happier? You'll be happy when all the body types that look like you are in control. Then you'll be happier. So this ethno-nationalism is destroying the world. It's destroying the higher capacity for human beings to see equality, not only simply amongst humans, but of all living entities. Animal slaughter is a great contributor to that. If we're slaughtering billions of animals, how can we find peace amongst human beings? We have such a vicious mentality, and that murderous mentality shows in our dealings with other human beings. So peace comes when we recognize how human beings, animals, nature, and the supreme consciousness, God, how we can all cooperate together. That is the ultimate purpose of the yoga and meditation system. Begin with having some clarity and lack of stress in your life. But that's not the end. Make further progress. Use that clarity and peacefulness to understand what is the ultimate source and what is the ultimate goal of life. Change your lifestyle, and then you're entitled to your fair share of the Earth's resources. This is the solution to all the arguing about. We should have more of this resource. You should have less. You should cut back. We need more. The solution is to recognize what's the purpose of human life. The purpose of human life is to become spiritually realized. That means not simply a religious believer. Religious believer is nice, but we must go beyond that if we're actually going to rejuvenate a true human civilization. We need practical experience of the non-material reality. That is the gift of a real human civilization. If you're living in accord with your true purpose, your ecological footprint will be so much less. Because you simply take what you need to live an enlightened life. Otherwise, how do we judge what is too much, what is too little? Just like here, as our founder, Srila Prabhupada, always explained, we're using technology. I'm speaking in a microphone. They're lights. They're fans. You might say, well, why are you yogis and meditators relying on all these technological innovations, and then your books condemn industrial enterprises and an industrial civilization? But as our founder, Srila Prabhupada, explained, we're practical. We use what is available without attachment. In other words, if there's no microphone, if there are no lights, if there are no fans, it's not the end of life for us. We take what is being produced in a mood of non-detachment. And most importantly, we use whatever is available for the highest purpose. To be spiritual, then, doesn't simply mean to repudiate everything, to renounce everything. Nothing belongs to you in the first place, so how can you repudiate it? How can you renounce it? But use everything for the highest purpose. That is the real purpose of the yoga and meditation knowledge given in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. In this verse, this extraordinary yogini, Kunti Devi, is pointing out all the prosperity we see around us is due to the personal glance of the Supreme Consciousness. We cannot overlook that factor. Just like this body has life because the non-material particle is present there. When that non-material particle disappears, the body is useless. Who cares for it? Similarly, behind nature, there is the Supreme Consciousness. A real human civilization uses its energies and resources for obtaining knowledge and experience of that Supreme Consciousness, knowledge and experience of Krishna. We say Krishna because the ultimate source is unlimitedly attractive. Everyone wants to be attracted to something. But what is the source of all attractiveness? People look at nature and become fascinated. They want to become re-enchanted with nature. What happened to nature? We forgot all about it. We're living as if nature doesn't matter. We're farming as if nature doesn't matter. Our industries and businesses for so long have neglected nature. If we can't understand how to deal with nature, how can we understand the best way to experience what is beyond material nature? We have to begin at the lowest level. Understand that human beings should live without destroying nature. Then we can start to understand there's a higher purpose to nature. The bhakti yoga, the Krishna conscious lifestyle, is about the best harmony. How to engineer your lifestyle so that not only are you re-enchanted by nature, but you're also re-enchanted by the ultimate source of nature. And then your life is on track. when your life is properly focused, you'll notice an amazing decrease in stress and anxiety. Another point I was explaining last night was that stress and anxiety has a purpose. It's nature's way of telling you your life is off the rails. So you may try to artificially deal with that stress by temporary methods. I'll just go for a walk in the park. I'll do some breathing exercises. I do all that. But those superficial methods don't get to the root. The root cause of our stress and anxiety is that we're living a disconnected lifestyle. We've forgotten what is our connection to the ultimate source. What is our ultimate connection to Krishna? Therefore, material nature kicks you with stress and anxiety. But we don't recognize the root cause. Instead, we look at superficial measures. No one likes to be stressed out. Anxiety is so painful. But we don't understand how to make the ultimate solution to stress and anxiety. In this way, an intelligent person can see that the bhakti yoga knowledge gets to the root of all problems. You want to talk economics? You want to talk politics? Understand what is the real purpose of human life. Otherwise, you have a so-called human civilization in which human beings are destroying nature and destroying themselves. Just like here in the USA, land of the free, home of the brave. 4% of the world's population and 40% of the world's military expenditures. 4% of the population and consuming 80% of the world's opioids. Something is way off track. So our bhakti yoga proposals are practical and necessary. Material solutions will not solve the problem. We have to recognize we are disconnected. Not simply disconnected from nature, but disconnected from the source of nature. Yoga and meditation is meant to correct that problem. In fact, the very term yoga means to connect, to link. Connect or link with what? We need knowledge and wisdom about that. And therefore, when there is a true rejuvenation of the human spirit, when the human vitality is being preserved for its true purpose, for its true mission, then you'll actually see a change. Otherwise, you can tinker with the economy this way. You can tinker with the politics that way. You can stress, emphasize your ethnic identity, but it won't work. The end result will simply be that human beings become more and more covered by illusion. Therefore, the greatest need for the day is genuine, comprehensive, profound spiritual knowledge, which will bring about true unity amongst human beings, yes, but more than that, it will bring about true unity amongst all living entities. We'll be able to live in harmony with human beings, with animals, with nature, and with the Supreme Source. This is how comprehensive and profound is the bhakti yoga knowledge given in this Krishna conscious literature. And if we can adjust our lifestyles to have the actual mission and purpose of human life, then we'll see we can easily live harmoniously. Without that ultimate purpose, we're so fragmented. We're blaming others. We're destroying our own habitat. We're destroying nature. We simply increase in hostility. You notice people don't know how to have relationships anymore. It's become so mystifying. everything becomes so problematic because we're disconnected. The ultimate goal of the yoga knowledge, the ultimate goal of the meditation system is how to have that ultimate connection. Have knowledge of what is that ultimate source. Belief in God is excellent, but it's only the beginning. We need knowledge and information of the Supreme. And then we can adjust our lifestyles in the best way. Any questions? Yes.
Are there any practical steps that you would speak about people?
This community here is a practical example of how to apply the ancient yoga wisdom and meditation knowledge. This community is in the city. It is using the resources of an urban metropolis for educating humanity in the highest goal of life. And the members of this community, because their life is focused on the ultimate goal, their existence is justified. Their use of the earth's resources is justified. Otherwise, if we're just living as selfish creatures, how am I going to enjoy today? It'll probably be at the expense of someone, but you know, that's the way the world is. You know, everyone's got to get their share, you know, and more. Nice persons finish last. We're not living like that. We're seeking that ultimate harmony. We're seeking that love supreme. And therefore, when persons see a community that is striving for these ideal goals, they become inspired. Not that everyone is going to follow in this way. It's not possible. But if just a small percentage of the world's population unites around understanding what is the ultimate goal of life, you'll see an extraordinary change.
Thank you.
Wonderful class, Maharaj. Sometimes people may look on our community as just another religious ideology. How can we give an example of how it's not just another religious ideology, but it's a practical application of something more than just a religious ideology?
When I'm speaking at universities, this topic often comes up. People in the audience wonder, am I going to lay a religious trip on them? So I explain the facts that in Bhagavad Gita, the prime bhakti yoga text of Krishna consciousness, nowhere does Krishna ask you to believe. Everywhere in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, here's the process by which you can experience what I'm saying. When I explain like that, everyone in the audience breathes a sigh of relief. Because at first they're on edge. They're a little bit interested at first. Their curiosity is aroused. Oh, he's a swami and he graduated from Yale University? What's going on here? Especially when I'm speaking at Ivy League schools, they have that curiosity. What happened to him? Why didn't he go to Wall Street? Why didn't he become a politician? But they have that fear. Is he going to simply speak religious ideology, doctrine, dogma? So I explained to them, Bhagavad Gita is giving you methodology, how to shape your lifestyle for experiencing all the wisdom that Krishna is giving. And I asked the audience, isn't that fair? Everyone, yeah, that's fair. Okay. I may not want to live like that, but okay, if it gives you some experience, go for it. So, yes, our great contribution is knowledge and applied spiritual technology. Anything else?
Thank you for the class, Maharaj. I had a question regarding those who are like very materially opulent. Is there a way to make them see that there may be a higher taste out there besides just money and fame and wealth?
Believe it or not, the Bhakti Yoga texts are not against wealth. They're against the misuse of wealth. You could be poor and misusing your pennies. And you could be a billionaire and misusing all your extraordinary wealth. Everything is about how you're using it, what you have. Recognize that everything is the property of the Supreme and use it for your self-realization and helping others to be enlightened. If you've got billions, try to help the whole world to be enlightened. At least, if you just have pennies, help yourself with a lifestyle of spiritual enlightenment. So again, to be a materialist is not, the definition doesn't depend on your social class, your ethnicity, this, that, the other. It simply depends on how you are using what you have. And do you consider yourself to be just the body and mind, and the goal of life is to get temporary pleasure for your body and mind? Those are the two ways to judge who is a materialist and who is not. This is Krishna's unique contribution in Bhagavad Gita. How to judge where you are at and how to change. Anything else? Yes.
Just a reflection, Maharaj. I really appreciated how you were saying that in society in general, we're very disconnected. And I was reflecting on how there's a lot of anxiety and depression and different problems, and how you were saying that the greatest solution is essentially to connect with that higher consciousness. So thank you for saying that.
And we need knowledge and experience of that supreme conscious source. We need knowledge of Krishna. How the ultimate source is unlimitedly, infinitely attractive. That's the ultimate goal of the yoga and meditation culture. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.